Last week, we saw how Jesus reacted when the disciples asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" But he wasn't finished yet. In 18 verse 6 of Matthew, he says, "But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." In other words, anyone who causes Christian children to sin will feel God's wrath in a powerful way. Now, the next three verses are normally preached on in terms of things that tempt believers, but as we read them, listen to the context. "Woe to the world for temptations to sin, for it is necessary that temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. And if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire." Jesus has just spoken about causing Christian children to sin, and there is no break as he goes on and talks about woe to the world for temptations to sin. I believe it is about temptations to cause children to sin, especially as in verse 10 he goes straight on with, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven." It is still in the context of the child he has placed in their midst. The same applies to the next few verses, which are often called the parable of the lost sheep, but it is still in the context of children. We can see that at the end of the parable, when in verse 14 he says, "So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." Now, I wonder what was going through your mind when I mentioned causing children to sin. Orphaned girls who are easy targets for sexual exploitation. Orphaned boys who often turn to crime, drugs, and are prone to become abusive in adult relationships. What about the 300,000 children, many as young as 10 years of age, who are currently participating as child soldiers in armed conflicts around the world? Suicide bombers as young as 10 years of age? Or perhaps you thought about the Dalits in India, the so-called untouchables, where more than 250 million Dalits are denied their basic human rights and dignity. There are more than 40 million child laborers in India. But it is not just poor children who are at risk. All children are at risk. Millions are at risk from poverty, but millions are also at risk from prosperity. As Louis Bush so aptly puts it, many children and young people today have everything to live with, but nothing to live for. Now, returning to the text, I'm sure that the disciples agreed with Jesus. They would never hurt children. But what about the sins of omission? Children can simply be looked upon as unimportant, second rate. Verse 10 says, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven." It seems children have representative angels in heaven, and therefore they should not be looked down upon or treated as if they are unimportant. I wonder how the disciples felt at the end of this discourse, especially as this was all in response to their question, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom?" How should we be feeling right now? Next week, we will do part 3.